Before the Lord's Passion, before he walked that royal road of the cross, before he was betrayed, denied, abandoned, before he was put up on a cross and shown at his weakest, he gave a few of his apostles an extraordinary experience. Right, you recall that he took them up a high mountain and he showed his glory to them in the transfiguration. And he did that so that when they were about to endure the most difficult thing that they had ever gone through, watching the one that they loved most be ridiculed, rejected, bruised, beaten, spat upon, and to know that they were at their weakest at that moment, that they would flee, deny, betray. The Lord knew that they needed hope. They needed something that would give them hope as a light shining in the darkness of the Passion. Well, he wants to give that same thing for us. As we are right here in the midst of Holy Week, just a few days away from that one beautiful liturgy that begins Holy Thursday at the Mass of the Lord's Supper and continues through Good Friday in the Liturgy of the Passion, and then finally culminates at the Easter Vigil. Before we enter into that mystery that's going to break our hearts, we need reasons for hope. Because I don't know, when I look around, there's a lot of reasons for hopelessness. And I probably don't have to list them all, but I think a big cause for our frequent hopelessness, something that kind of nudges us toward despair, is a sense of powerlessness. I wish that things were this way, but I feel like I cannot do anything to make them so, whether it be politically, ecclesially, in the church. We have the incredible opportunity to know everything that's going on everywhere in the world, and we bear that terrible burden and that awful cross of knowing everything that's happening everywhere in the world. We see all of the dirty laundry outside of the church and within the church, and it can make us feel so little, so powerless. Then we look at our own families and we think, I'm trying there too, but I just feel like every time that I try to bring it in the right direction, all of my efforts are in vain. And the Lord wants to enter into all of that hopelessness, all of that despair, all of that powerlessness and say, when you are at your weakest, when I seem most absent, most silent, and at my weakest, that's when I'm actually accomplishing the redemption in you. And so as those three apostles, Peter, James, and John, had their Tabor moment on Mount Tabor, right here, do you know what that golden table on top of which the monstrance is, do you know what we traditionally call that in the church? That's the Tabor. We name that after the mountain on which the Lord showed his glory to his apostles. And today we reflect on how he's been showing us his glory. Because in the midst of all that darkness, I hope that all of us have had some moments of bright light that can, as we enter into this Passion Week, can remind us that the Lord is victorious, that the light does overcome the darkness, that the Passion is not just our time to think about how awful it is that we have sinned and that the Lord has suffered, but much more to remind us how incredibly beloved we are, that the Lord loved us so much that what spurred him on was less our guilt and more his delight in us. It wasn't just, they got themselves into this mess and now I got to get them out of it. It was more of a, there's hope for them yet. I love them so much. They are worth every single step. So So what the Lord did for the apostles, he's done in each of our lives in little ways where he's shown us his glory, shown us his love. And I thought this would be a wonderful opportunity to let you in on some of the ways that he's given me reasons for hope entering into this Holy Week. First, my new gig, right? What the church has asked me to do, which is to help form men who are discerning a priestly vocation, to be able to enter into that discernment as well as possible so that they can know their own hearts and know the heart of the Lord. Once I arrived there on campus, was told, oh, you're going to be leading our program for the first year men. And I said, that's wonderful. I love working with the first year men. That's a very just tender time in someone's life when you've just made this big decision and you're thinking, did I just make a terrible mistake or am I excited about where this is going to take me? And then they said, oh, and the program starts in a couple weeks and you're going to go off for a training that's going to take 2 weeks. So here are the keys. Good luck. It has been such a delight to work with these men. We started with 18 men in this propaedeutic house. Propaedeutic basically means preparatory. And it's this brand new thing that the church is doing where it's the first stage of their priestly formation. Before they study philosophy, before they go off for pastoral ministry, before they study theology or do anything of that sort, they spend a year focusing on their spiritual and their human formation. Basically, they spend a year looking at their heart, looking at the Sacred Heart and saying, where do our desires align? Do I want to walk this path or not? Are you inviting me to continue stepping forward or not? And these men are one of the greatest reasons I have for hope. Because they're messed up. But they're working on it. The whole world's messed up, but so few are working on it. But these guys from day one, they're saying, yeah, Father, I struggle with this. And I say, welcome to the club. Okay. Let's move forward. And I get to live with these men on the hallway. So I went from a rectory to a dorm room, but it's a dorm room and a half, so can't complain there. But the guys just give this, they have this sense of excitement for service. They want to serve rather than to be served. Which, it's not a glamorous thing right now to be a seminarian. Like, we're not in the Bing Crosby 50s, right? It's not something where people see a priest and say, oh my gosh, what a wonderful human being. I automatically trust him. For some, that's the case. For others, they see the collar and they see, well, let me tell you my opinions about the church. Buckle up, Padre. And I can't blame them. Because a lot of people have been hurt. A lot of people are still hurting. And these guys are entering in to that situation, to that environment, knowing that they're not going in because it's going to be the lap of luxury. They're going in because they love God and love his people and want to know how they can serve. They're messed up, but they work on their stuff. I get to not only live with them and coordinate the whole program for the first year, but I meet individually with these guys every 2 weeks or more as needed. You know, some it's more needed, others less. And just journey with them in discerning what has the Lord made you for? How do you understand your life up to this point? How has the Lord been working and how does the Lord still want to work in you? And I have the great honor of just walking with them for this year of their journey, of entering deeper into the Sacred Heart with them to be able to see there the delight that God has in them. And they give me a reason for hope because they have helped me to look at how messed up I am and to work on it as well. And so that's the first reason for hope here, is that just as the men who are seeking to serve you better throughout their lives, recognize that they're messed up, but also recognize that Jesus is willing to enter into the mess and work with them and bring healing where healing is needed, So it's the same for us. Maybe we don't live in a seminary environment where we have a holy hour before the Blessed Sacrament every single day baked into our schedule. Maybe we can't get to Holy Mass. We don't have a priest who's assigned to journey with us in that kind of intimate way of living together and every 2 weeks having a one-on-one. But we have the Lord, right? And ultimately, all those other structures, those are nice, but they're nothing without Jesus. And if you have Jesus, you can build a little seminary structure within your life. You might be able to say, I can't do an hour of adoration. That's just physically impossible because I'm not free during the times that it's offered. Well, can you give an hour of prayer? You might say, no, even there, Father, I can't. Well, here's the beautiful thing, is God's calculus is very different than ours, right? He doesn't count things and their worth just in minutes. He sees to the heart, and he might see that if I spend maybe on average with the guys for all of our different prayers, I'm usually in the chapel with them for about 3 hours a day. Your 3 minutes that you've been able to carve out of your schedule and fight for and protect and just give to the Lord as a fragrant offering might be more precious to him than my 3 hours. So give him your 3 minutes. These guys, they have a community of friends there that are journeying with them. They have their classes together, their meals together. They have it easy in that sense. But who are your friends? Who's your cohort? Who are the people that you can turn to and say, you know what? I just need someone to pray with me right now because I have just been being slammed by temptation to this sin that I thought that I overcame. So can we just pray together? All of the guys in my program have an accountability partner that just keeps them honest with any of their disciplines that they're trying to take on. We can think to ourselves, can I have a person like that in my life? Maybe we don't see perfectly eye to eye on everything, but can we at least choose to love each other enough to say, I'm going to help you with this. Would you help me with that? So give God whatever time you can carve out in prayer, whether it's 3 minutes, 3 hours, or anything in between. Draw to yourself even just one friend who can journey with you. Maybe if you don't have many friends and your spouse isn't terribly or isn't very devoted to their faith, you might just say, you know what? How can I meet my spouse on some middle ground to where my spouse can help me to grow in virtue and I can help my spouse? Maybe even I won't mention Jesus in this. I might just say, help me to overcome my addiction to the snooze button. Whatever the case may be. But what time are you giving to Jesus? And who are you surrounding yourself with to set yourself up for success? So that's the first reason for hope, is the work that I'm doing with these guys. The fact that they're messes that recognize that they're beloved messes of God. And they're really phenomenal human beings. And I'm so excited for the priests we're going to have in 6, 7, 8 years when these guys are ordained. And I really mean it when I say they highlight to me what a mess I am. Because I look at them and I'm like, you're in your first year of seminary and you're more virtuous than I am already. So really, good things are coming for the church in the U.S. with these men. But then the second reason for hope. And that, I don't know, some of you may have seen, in September I went to Poland for the beatification mass of some family members of mine. The Ulma family, my great-grandfather, his cousin, was the heroic wife of this now blessed family. And I'll just recap the story right here. So they were just simple, ordinary Catholics who went to Mass, prayed together, read the Bible. They had interests and hobbies. Victoria Ulma, she liked to study. She was actually one of the more educated women in that town just because she had that interest and had the courage to pursue it at a time that many women either weren't given the opportunity or didn't have maybe the desire. Well, she did, and she took her opportunity. Yusef was something of an entrepreneur. He just had so many different cool ideas for how he can feed his ever-growing family. So on the side, he would do some photography. He was into beekeeping. He had several different interests. And all of these things that paint the picture of somebody that you can live next to. These were ordinary people living ordinary Catholic lives in extraordinarily difficult times. Because this was, of course, the time that World War II broke out. They lived in a little southeastern town of Poland called Markowa. And at the time that their Jewish neighbors were being rounded up and taken to ghettos, and then from the ghettos, taken to concentration camps to be brutally murdered. They didn't know everything that was going on, but they knew that it was bad. And some of their Jewish neighbors went out of their way to go to the Ulma family's door because they knew that there they would be welcomed. And so it was. It was because Yusef and Victoria lived their ordinary Catholic lives with an extraordinary dedication. Because they were good neighbors in the ordinary circumstances, in the extraordinary circumstances, those who needed refuge came to them. Because they had this normal, natural openness to life and their family just kept growing and growing, they had hearts that were disposed to protect life when life needed protecting. And so, as a family unit, having to be united in keeping this secret that would mean death if they were found out, they harbored two Jewish families for almost 2 years. Now, this was something that they would have to have the children participate in. The children would have to be in on the secret. And you see here the heroism of little babes. We sometimes sell our kids short. We say, oh, no, they can't be heroes yet. I'm not gonna call them to any greatness yet. Someday when they're adults. Instead of recognizing our call to holiness starts now and so does theirs. Obviously, we have patience with them. We have understanding. We recognize that life is tough when you're 7 or when you're 17 or when you're 77. But do we invite our children into the heroic life of Catholic living? Or not. So the family harbored these two Jewish families for about a year and a half, 2 years. And then they were found out. Now, because in Poland so many were helping their neighbors and giving shelter, in Poland it was the only place in all of the Third Reich, all of the occupied territory of the Nazis, where they had a death penalty for anybody who even knew about anybody who was harboring Jews. So if any of the Ulma family's neighbors knew about it and said nothing, they would be killed. Those were the measures that the Nazis had to take to keep some of these ordinary Polish Catholics from just living their ordinary Catholic faith in extraordinary times with extraordinary love. We don't know exactly how the Germans found out, but they did. And they ended up raiding the home of the Ulma family, tragically killing the two Jewish families that they were harboring, then killing the entire family, Yusef, Victoria, their 6 children outside of the womb, and as a result of this, the 7th child that Victoria was heavily pregnant with. Now, that doesn't sound like a story of hope, does it? No, from the world's eyes, that's just a tragedy. Evil won. Darkness conquered light. But what we know from our Lord in that monstrance, our Lord in the transfiguration on Mount Tabor, what we know from the Lord in the resurrection, is that the Ulma family is reigning in heaven. The dream of Yusuf and Victoria was that all of their children would be saints. It wasn't just that their children would be lawyers and doctors and have good health and long lives and great friends. All of those are great desires, but the greatest desire is I want them to reign with Christ in heaven forever. And that victory was achieved. For the first time in the history of the Catholic Church, a whole family was declared blessed, including the child that at the beginning of the martyrdom was still in the womb of Victoria. Now, how is this a reason for hope? Well, it reminds us heroism's still possible. Right? The world's in a bad place. Our country doesn't give much signs of hope. But in the midst of that, our faith gives us an unending wellspring of hope. Because we recognize that we, ordinary Catholics that we are, just living out our Catholic faith in the most ordinary way, are capable, by the grace of God, of being great heroes. But only if we look to care for one another. In their family Bible of the Ulma home, they were looking through it after the fact. And they saw that a well-worn page was the one with the Good Samaritan story. And in the margin of the Good Samaritan story, there was just written, "Tak." Yes. Almost as if they were vowing to be that Good Samaritan for whoever would need it. I wonder how many times over that year and a half that mother and that father were wrestling with the danger that they were putting their children in. Did they say, "If the Lord did this for me, how can I not do this for him? I see him in these families we're harboring. Can I kick him out? I can't. Do I want to raise my children comfortable or heroic? Obviously, I try to give them everything that I can to make their lives as good as possible. But more than anything, I want them to have spectacular souls, heroic characters." Yusuf and Victoria and their kids, they weren't different from you. They had access to the same Bible. They had access to the same sacraments. They were ordinary people with their ordinary struggles. They probably bickered and fought the same way you do with your spouse. They probably had the same petty little disagreements. But they had access to a God that could make them heroes. And so do we. So these two main reasons that we have for hope, at least that I'm sharing with you today, those are mine. I hope that with these minutes that we have left before the Blessed Sacrament, you can look over this past year since the last time that we celebrated the resurrection. You can say, "Lord, what were the transfiguration moments? What are the situations in my life that are shedding some light in the darkness? What are the situations and the moments in my life that have shown me you are powerful, more powerful than my problems? What have you done in me that may give hope to someone else?" We may say, what is the little seminary that I'm creating in my life to help me live out the priesthood of the baptized that I have by virtue of my baptism? What is helping me to be a saint? How am I committing to living out my ordinary Catholic faith with an extraordinary dedication and love? We have moments that the Lord has given us that we can reflect on with gratitude. We have desires in our hearts for saintliness and for heroism. And this Holy Week is a privileged and blessed opportunity for us to let Jesus change us. Because we can either be spectators of the passion, or we can be participants in the passion. As spectators, we can say, "Look at what Jesus did." We might feel guilty by it. We might say, "Look at what my sins made Jesus do." Or we might be participants saying, "Jesus, how can I help you carry that cross? Jesus, how can I wipe your face for you? I know that it's not going to change your fate, but it will make you know you are loved." How can I tell you in my actions this week, Lord, I love you and I want to walk this way with you? How do we let him change us from merely spectating and seeing the way of the cross only through the lens of our guilt, seeing what our sins did and then what he did to free us from our sins, and instead be able to participate in it in the mode of love, to be able to recognize that it was not my sins but his love that nailed him to the cross? Yes, it was punishment for my sins, but he didn't have to do it. He wasn't caught in some legal trap. He kept himself on the cross because he delights in you. Yes, messed up you. Yes, you who has so much to work on. Yes, you who feels like, if I were in the Ulma family situation, I don't know what I would do. You. And he says, this week, how are you going to participate in my passion with me? Maybe this Lent up to this point has felt like a failure. You might say, I started out with great intentions and now I feel like I'm a monster to my family. First thing you need to learn there is don't give up coffee again. You, messed up weak you. You, beloved, delightful you. Enter into the passion with the Lord this week. Let the work that our future priests are doing give you hope. Let the example of the Ulma family give you hope. Let the Lord who is present among us here give you hope that not only will he be able to do something extraordinary in this blessed Triduum, but he is inviting you to participate in that so that he could do something extraordinary in you and through you to give hope to a world that is deep in despair.